for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 329 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's another special doubleheader week, as I have two great interviews with two great creators, each of whom has a Kickstarter project going on right now. I have an important update to relay. Both of them have met their goals as of this posting. But there are terrific stretch goals to be had, so please don't hesitate to go out and support both of these projects. First up is Michael Bracco, who makes The Creators, among other things. It's an interesting story about adolescence and the power that can be had in that era of life. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say about how he put this book together. Then everything wraps up with Kevin Roditelli, the writer and one of the guiding forces behind Glacial, a fantastic fantasy about ice and snow and people that have to survive in it, as well as these very unique characters that he's come up with. So I'm sure you can enjoy that as well. There's a lot to get to this week, so let's get to it.
Hi, my name is Michael Bracco, and I am the artist and writer of The Creators. The Creators is a story about a step in human evolution that gives a small portion of the world's young population the ability to literally bring their imaginations to life through their artwork. This power, fueled by raw adolescent emotion, can be beautifully awe-inspiring or massively destructive and dangerous, depending on the intent of who wields it. The story of The Creators is told through the eyes of a young girl named Maya, who, after suffering a traumatic loss, brings forth a very special creation named Cardin to serve as her protector and friend as they run from the Bureau of Creative Enforcement, a government agency developed to hunt down and deal with all young creators. During their escape, Maya and Cardin wind up at the Creator Academy, an educational facility for kids like Maya, run by the original creator, Morgan Atain, a former creator obsessed with regaining the powers she outgrew years ago. Trapped at the Creator Academy and separated from her precious Cardin, Maya, along with the other creators she befriends at the Academy, must learn all they can about the strange new world around them and find a way to thrive amidst powerful adversaries, conspiracies, and a world that hates and fears them.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Michael Bracco, the creator of The Creators, interestingly enough. One of the books that I think I know you're behind, and I've seen other books that you're involved with as well. Mm-hmm. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing really, really well. How are you?
Good, good. I have seen you at several conventions. The first one I think I ever saw you at was at New York Comic Con a while back.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I got, I think, your first book. And then I saw you, I think, Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I think there's a couple more in there too.
Yeah, I get around. I have a real problem remembering which convention it is I meet people at. Yeah.
Well, it's AwesomeCon. That was the one I just saw you at recently.
Yes.
That's where I saw you, was AwesomeCon.
Yes.
Because I had a good time. That was AwesomeCon was a well-named con. There was a lot of good stuff going on at AwesomeCon, I thought.
You know, it is a well-named con, and I'm actually pretty tight with the crew that puts it on. Hmm. The only problem I have with AwesomeCon is it makes that word null and void, and it drives me batty. It really, really does. Because I'm very aware of every time I use the word awesome, and apparently I already use it too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I almost never use that word. I mean, it's really rare for me to use it. I have a friend of mine who, of all things, works for George Lucas, and he uses that word almost every sentence. And every once in a while I look at him and I say, could you use another word except awesome? The stuff you do is awesome. Oh, it was just so awesome. I looked at him and I said, come on, David, don't do that. You know, there are other words in the language beside awesome, you know. But
absolutely. I will try to give you a variety of adjectives tonight.
Well, if it's appropriate, then I'm all for it. But it has to really work for me in order for it to be truly awesome in that sense. So speaking of awesome, let's get on to your work here. Well, first of all, like I said, it's been a while you've been going to cons and doing books. And The Creators is the one I think I know you best from. Before we get into The Creators, why don't you talk about other things that you do as well that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so I guess I've been in the game about 10 years, maybe a little bit more than that. So I do the convention scene, but I actually got started in the indie craft scene. I went to school in Baltimore and have a background in illustration, and I do mostly like science fiction and fantasy stuff. And I guess how I got my start was with through my business, Spaghetti Kiss, developing designs and screen printing monsters and robots on t-shirts and stuff like that. But as far as comics go, the first books I did were the Novo series through Alterna Comics, who I'm still with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got to ask, Spaghetti Kiss, where did Spaghetti Kiss come from?
So, and I actually got in trouble for this one time, for this answer. Well, part of it anyway. When I was in college, I was doing a lot of monster paintings. And one of them was of two creatures with multiple tongues making out. Mm. And it was a really, really kind of it's a cute but really gross image. And I decided to name my company after that. And it stuck because when I first started, like I said, I was doing craft shows. And for the most part, and this is where I got in trouble the last time, it was a lot of like middle-aged women. Now I'm a middle-aged guy, and I don't think of the people who come to these shows as older or old, because I'm older than most of them. But at the time, I was like, oh yeah, you know, all these women would come to the show and see my company name and go, oh, Spaghetti Kiss, like Lady and the Tramp. And then they would see the picture of two monsters like enrapturing each other with like 1,000 tongues and be like, oh my God, that's horrible. My kids would love it. And then, yeah, so it really stuck.
Okay, so that explains that. I wondered about that. I never thought of Lady and the Tramp. I figured monsters is what I figured was what was going on. But all right, so that's interesting stuff. Now, I was reading in here, one of the things I wanted before we get into this, I saw that you were teaching art full time to middle school students.
Yeah.
Are you still doing that?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 16 years.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. For the most part, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I love my time with the kids, and we can talk about this when we get into the creators. But it's a major inspiration point for many aspects of it.
So. I was going to say, when I read the story and I saw most of them are teenagers and not all of them have the best of relationships with their parents, mm-mm, I was wondering if your students actually inspired some of the storytelling in there. So I guess based on what you just said, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And and like I said, when we get into it, there's a lot of stuff I can tell you about how it lines up and things like that.
So before we get to creators then, other things that you're working on?
I started, my first book was a series called the Novo series. Mm-hmm. And it's more science fiction fantasy. Mm-hmm. And it's about a young alien boy who is the product of two different species who wasted their existences warring over petty, bigoted nonsense, only to find out that they were biologically engineered to commingle and create something new. But when they figure this out, it's too late, and Novo, this little boy, is the only survivor of both cultures, but the only like hybrid of the two. So he's this kind of wasted messiah character. And it's all about him learning how to make connections with other diverse cultures after learning what he could from the mistakes of his ancestors.
Is that series still going on, or have you wrapped that up?
So it wrapped up in 2011. Through Alterna Comics. But I just signed, I've been talking about re-releasing it as newsprint issues. It was a black and white series, and I'm going to be doing a color treatment on it starting in 2020. Mm. So that's exciting.
That's interesting because, you know, I'm always interested because, like, Bone started out black and white, and then they did a color version of it, and other books that start out black and white, like Turtles. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, famously started out black and white and then went to color and stuff like that. So that's interesting. Of course, Alterna is making a lot of hay out of the newsprint stuff because it keeps the cost down.
Oh, yeah, which is fantastic. So I got to put – I did another series called Adam Wreck, which was more like pulpy, fun, family-friendly sci-fi, you know, something that I would have loved to read with my dad when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it came out as a graphic novel back in 2009. And like you said, with Alterna, they're now only putting out well, for the most part, issues that are all printed on newsprint. And it's amazing because every comic is $1.50 in the whole, you know, lineup of what they're doing. And it's really taken this indie company and blown it up and turned it into something really accessible, and new people are discovering new stories. And to be part of that was just really cool.
They were in Toys R Us for a while, but I don't think Toys R Us is surviving, unfortunately. But it has nothing to do with Alterna.
Oh, it was completely our fault. No. No, seeing my book on a shelf in Toys R Us was definitely a really great moment.
Isn't that interesting? So, okay. So those are the things you're working on right now. I usually do this last, but while we're into this stuff, let's do this first. If people want to keep up with your stuff, what's the way to do that? Are you on Facebook, Instagram?
I'm on everything. And again, like Spaghetti Kiss is a really great way to find me on any social media. Just all one word. SpaghettiKiss.com, SpaghettiKiss.etsy.com, Instagram, Twitter, whatever you want. I do warn you, if you follow me on Instagram, it's, I'd say 60% my artwork and 40% my daughter.
Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Now, and so people don't get confused, spell your last name for us.
Bracco. B as in boy, R-A-C-C-O.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm afraid people put a K in there or something. And who knows Fair what enough. People will come up with. Yeah, so it's good. So, well, as far as – why don't we wrap up all this stuff and then we'll get to creators. As far as conventions go this year, are there other conventions you're planning to go to during 2018?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I have a couple new ones. Mm-hmm. This weekend I'll be at Pile of Craft, which is in Baltimore. It's a craft show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be in Trenton Ave Arts Festival next weekend, but I'm planning on doing Escape Velocity, the Ocean City, New Jersey Comic Con, Baltimore Comic Con, Small Press Expo, New York Comic Con, Anime USA, and that's just the ones I think I have lined up right now.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Because I know I've seen you at several cons, like I was mentioning, and I always think it's a great thing when people get out there. I was just talking with another creator, and we were talking about the fact that maybe you may not make all the money you want at a convention, but the connections might be worth the time to be there.
They can be, for sure, yeah. So, a lot of my favorite collaborations are just having fun at a con, or after a con.
Mm-hmm. This is great stuff. This got Awesome Con was a great one for that too. There was a lot of things that went on. We found people who knew things about the book that I was working with. That's of course that Stabby Bunny, but we ran into other people, and it just turned out to be really a great connection con. If we made good money too, it wasn't a bad thing. But we also turned into, you know, a great connect. I want to call it Connect the Con.
Oh yeah,
all kinds of connections going on there and good things like that. So. All right, well, let's get to the creators, why don't we? Now, this when it says the creators by Michael S. Bracco, that really is by you. I mean, you do the mm-hmm. writing and the artwork, and it looks like do you do the coloring and everything and the lettering too?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is your book.
Yeah.
So talk about this. How did you get started doing the creators, especially because most people can't do the whole thing. Some people are good at parts of the process. Some people are good at none of the process, and they still do it anyway. But you did a good job of pulling all these varying elements together, and it's a lot of fun to read. Talk about making the creators.
Yeah, so just to give you a brief, the pitch just to – you know, clarify. So The Creators is a science fiction about a wave in evolution that causes a small population of young people scattered across the globe to suddenly develop the ability to bring their imaginations to life through their drawings. The power can be the most beautiful, world-changing thing you can imagine, but it's tied to these kids' emotional states. So if they go through something traumatic like bullying or abuse, or if their power is met with fear or violence in any way, it can come out in really horrible ways. It's almost like kaiju monsters and, you know, big, horrible things. So I got started into this after I'd finished the Novo series, which I'd worked on for a decade. I had this kind of existential comic book crisis where I just didn't know what I was going to do. And I found out that my wife and I were expecting, we were going to have a child. Mm-hmm. And so I started pouring through all my old children's books. Just to find what I'd want to share and what I'd want to read to this new person. And I stumbled upon a book that I loved as a kid called Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Hmm.
Are you familiar with it?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So this is one of these books that for me was so omnipresent. And over the course of talking about the creators, I'm always surprised at how many people don't know what it is. But it's a very simple premise. It's a very sweet book about a little boy sitting in a blank room and he's bored. and he has nothing to do, so he pulls out a purple crayon and he draws a window. And he looks out the window and he's like, well, there's nothing to look at. So he draws the moon. And then he gets curious and wants to go to the moon. So he climbs out of the window that he just drew into the wall and enters this whole world that he's drawn. And like I said, it's very simple. It's very happy. There's not a lot of turmoil in it. And it's really pretty because it's all black and white and gray with just the hint of purple with what he draws. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love all over again with it. And I was like, this is a book that I want to read to a kid. But what the hell would happen if this kind of stuff happened in the real world? And I started thinking about like the practical application of this power. And it really started making a lot of connections to what I do at my job as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I teach art in middle school and a public school. And the school I teach at has a small magnet program for kids with a variety of special needs. Mm-hmm. And I'm the art teacher, so I teach everybody at the same time. And because of that, the real amazing thing is there are kids in my room who are learning together that aren't very often together. And so it's this truly like inclusive room where kids are learning from each other and experiencing each other's strengths and weaknesses and their potential. And I don't know, it's really great. Mm-hmm. And, but a lot of times if you have a kid with any type of special need, whether it's behavioral or cognitive or physical or, you know, linguistic, if like people treat them like kids with problems, and anytime you treat a kid like a kid with a problem, well, they start becoming a problem. You know, you kind of reap what you sow. But as soon as you treat a kid as a bucket of potential with obstacles and flaws, you know, like anybody else, then all of a sudden they start thinking about themselves as potential and can do real great things. Mm-hmm. That's really rare. And I thought that with this book, I could use this ridiculous power to kind of serve as an allegory for that. So these kids who can change the world are met with nothing but like fear and violence. And it kind of highlights what these kids do because, you know, or go through bullying and just like the hardships of being a kid. I remember as a kid always being told, oh, these are the best years of your life, mm-hmm. which I thought was complete BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I think for some people, you know, childhood is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I had a very great upbringing with wonderful parents. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, I liked being an adult. I liked being the one in charge of what I say and what I do. And I just remember that, like, these kids are being treated badly in these quote unquote best years of their lives. And it brings out horrible things in them. Mm-hmm. And then I found out after like doing all these sketches and stuff of different monsters, I found out that I was going to have a little girl. Mm. And up to this point, all the stories I'd written, both series were both seen through like my eyes, and both protagonists were male. Mm-hmm. And very, very few like female characters in any of the books. Mm-hmm. And I started really taking notice of that and realizing that I wanted to write something that kind of looked at the world trying to find like a sympathetic or empathetic viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I came up with the main character, who is a young 15-year-old girl named Maya, mm-hmm. who is a projection of what I imagined based on what I look like and what my wife looks like, what my daughter would look like in 15 years. Mm-hmm. And then I started like realizing that it almost made it feel token to me. So I just started like littering the world with as many like strong female characters in all like, you know, protagonists, antagonists, supporting roles. And I don't know, it just made me think of storytelling in a different way, because I'm not looking at the world through my own eyes. I'm looking at it through eyes that I have to talk to people in order to explore. And I had lots of conversations with my wife about, you know, like what it was like for her to be young and asking her questions. And so, yeah, so that was another big thing that really kind of took hold in the storytelling.
Hmm. Now, I have to ask, you talked about this hairy book with the purple. When I look at your books, it's mostly black and white, but there is another color that shows up occasionally. And I don't want to get you in trouble with that book, but there's some purple in here, and I'm kind of wondering, that must have really inspired you to use a little bit of purple in your story like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely an homage to it. Mm-hmm. And whenever I talked to, and now, like, that I've found that it's kind of rare that people know what Harold and the Purple Crayon is. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody does, I love it because they're flipping through my book and I start talking about Harold and the Purple Crayon and they get this real like knowing, smiling look and they're like, oh my God, that's why you have this color scheme. And I was like, yeah. And I get really excited when they get it. It's black and white, but I use all watercolor washes, mm-hmm. which make it really moody and very, I've been told it has like a very Lovecraftian feel to it, which was not intentional at first, mm-hmm. but I do have a lot of love for like the creature descriptions from Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. And, so it's fun for me to use this source material that's super quaint and happy and do it in the most dark and nightmarish ways.
Now I got to ask, do you remember who the person is that writes that book?
Oh my goodness. I'd like to say I do.
Okay.
I do, but every time somebody says it, I always forget.
Okay.
That said, the beautiful thing is that
the internet
is an internet and, yeah, it's Crockett Johnson. I couldn't remember.
Okay, well, that's really good because I got a sense that some people might want to actually look that book up. See, there are some kids' books like you. I grew up reading comics instead of kids' books.
Mm.
And so there were some books I didn't read until later, and one of them was The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Oh, man, I love Shel Silverstein.
Which still, to me, is one of these people always ask me, what kind of stories do you think kids should be reading? And I always like to point to that one, because mm-hmm. I think that's an indication that you shouldn't always be self-absorbed, that those of us that we really respect and admire are the ones that aren't that way, that actually are giving people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always kind of taken up by that, and I to this day I think it influences my behavior, that book.
I think that's wonderful. My dad hated that book.
Really? Why?
Because he felt he's such a he was an environmental science major, and the thing that makes him more mad than anything is when somebody cuts down a tree just to make something a little bit more aesthetically pleasing in their yard. And he thought that, you know, and the book is really to get you to empathize with the tree and the people in your life that are, you know, givers.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize that when you love something like that tree loves that man,
mm-hmm.
it's very much like a parent loves their child.
Right.
My dad could never get past the fact. He's like, that little jerk just took advantage and then just cut down the tree. Yeah. And it just sent him into this depressed tizzy. I always felt really bad.
Oh, nuts. Well, anyway, those of us that liked it, I can see his point of view, but to mm-hmm. me, to this day, I still think of it. The very end is, even when he's got nothing left, he still provides a seat for the guy to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
I was just so moved by that. I said, wow, you know, this giving thing is really something. So I really liked that.
It's such a beautiful book, and it's one that I didn't get as a kid, and then as I got older, it was one that really, mm-hmm. really hit me hard.
Mm-hmm. So the creators, let's talk about where we are with the creators right now. I think initially you did a smaller book that was like the first chapter, and then you came up with a bigger volume of it. Is the bigger volume where you're at now, or have you moved on to other stuff?
No, so I'm actually so the first volume that you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I was just starting the book, I wanted to make like a little ash can book. And I ran a Kickstarter for it, and I hit play on the Kickstarter, and my wife 5 minutes later said, "I think my water broke," I didn't really look too much at the Kickstarter, obviously, for the next like day and a half, and came back to found that it kind of blown up a little bit more than I expected, so I ended up making the. I like to think of it as the pilot issue, which was the first chapter of the book. And then I worked really hard for the next couple of years and put out volume one, which is the first 200-ish pages or first six chapters.
Right.
And now I just finished chapters 7 through 12 and am done with volume two. And I'm actually kickstarting that right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. When's it going to end?
End of the month. Last day of the month.
Last day of the month. Okay, so we gotta make sure everybody hears about this before the end of the month. That's what we got to do. Okay, so that's going on. Because I've seen you at places like that. And, of course, the Kickstarters and stuff are always a sign of success to me. that when you go and you sell places, and you know, we talked about the fact that you can make connections and that might be more beneficial than the money you'll make. But on the other hand, you're getting the word out and making people aware of your products and stuff like that, I always think is really a sign that you're doing a good job as far as communicating stuff like that. And especially, I don't want you to spoil anything, but you know, the first six books are really moving.
Thank you.
And we get a lot of development as far as the characters go. And I don't want you to spoil too much, but as far as like the second volume, what's going to – can you – don't spoil things, but maybe tease some things that might happen in the second volume?
So, yeah. And I think what's interesting – like one of the things is that when I talk about the book to like somebody who's about to buy it, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't really spoil much. Mm-hmm. That's easy to talk about. Mm. So one of the ways that the world has changed is that there's a new government agency that is tasked with handling these young people. Mm-hmm. And they're called the BCE, or the Bureau of Creative Enforcement. Mm. And because they're constantly battling children, they wear masks to hide their – to keep their anonymity. And so there are these really creepy, like gas mask looking guys in federal agent suits. Mm-hmm. So you have like this government element to it. Also, when volume one starts, it's not the beginning of creation. You kind of are picking up in the third wave of it. Mm. And the antagonist of the series name is Morgan Attain, who is somewhere between like 27 and 29 years old. She was one of the three original creators who outgrew her powers because they only appear throughout the extent of adolescence, which, as we know, can be different times for different amounts of time for different people. Mm-hmm. And she's obsessed with getting this power back. And the first book is all about that journey for her as an antagonist. But for Maya, for a protagonist, Morgan, in order to find her power, opens up a kind of school or academy that's hidden in some of the protected grounds in Maryland, in the Patapsco protected grounds. Mm-hmm. That's another aspect of the book. It all takes place in the Baltimore, D.C. area. So every location in it are real locations. Mm-hmm. She has this school, and they capture young creators to bring them there to like teach them how to control their powers and kind of keep them away from the public while they're developing this. And it's run by this woman who's an ex-creator. Mm-hmm. So while the protagonist, Maya, is there, she makes different friends who come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of about them trying to figure out how to get connected with their creations again and escape. Mm-hmm. So I will say that they do escape, but there's a whole lot of other stuff that's the real spoilery stuff that I won't say. Mm-hmm. But in the second volume, it's all about them on the run and seeing kind of the world from a very different perspective while Morgan advances her plans to regain her powers. And she has a real big chip on her shoulder because of how the world treats creators and how they treat her. And and it really kind of jumps into that. And I think I told you enough without spoiling anything.
Okay. See, one of the things I'm fascinated about the book is, of course, when I always have to compare things like this to the X-Men. And, you know, adolescence starts when the powers come out, but they never go away. I think one of the creative things you've come up with is this notion that they do go away after a certain point. And that, of course, is going to – that's going to make a person very different. You know, if a very important part of who they are suddenly goes away in their adulthood, that's, you know, I think we've seen that in some of the characters, that they don't want that to go. When you're talking about Morgan and the fact that she wants it to return.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Well, and she does still have... She has... So there are different types of creators. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of just based off of the id and the ego. Mm-hmm. And the id is... serving impulse, serving need. And so most creators, when they create, it's to serve a purpose. And then when that purpose is over, the creation dissipates and goes away. Mm-hmm. Maya, the protagonist, one of the big kind of defining moments for her is that she loses her parents very tragically in a home invasion. Mm-hmm. And in her kind of distraught PTSD state after this, she brings forth a creation that's kind of like this big walking bipedal unicorn named Cardin, who's kind of a mash between her mother and the stories that her mother would read her a lot as a child. And she has such a need to get her parents back and to have some sort of maternal connection that it becomes an ego and it becomes sentient. And it doesn't run out because she needs it forever. And Morgan, the antagonist, has I call them role creations because they serve a role beyond just a need. And her creations were, when she became aware that she was going to lose her power, she created like a small contingent of creatures that were there to protect her, to feed her ego, and to help her find a way to get her power back. And so, yeah, so she's got this like very tiny army of like 8 or 9 different creations that are always flanking her, always doing her bidding, always worshiping her.
Wow. It's a great story. It's really something that's really interesting, and it's fascinating to see where you're going to go with this, because, you know, I've always... there are two groups of people that still mystify me. Number one is young children, because I don't understand what they're thinking. And number two are adolescents, because they're in that mid-ground. And it's hard to understand exactly what their rationale is either. Neither one of them do I really understand. And so as a teacher, I think that somebody that you could see this kind of stuff going on in their individual lives, not only as with adolescents, but with adults too, probably could see the impact of adolescence has had on these people. So I think that's a great, it makes this story really unique in my opinion, because too many people are just flat out two-dimensional, but there's a lot of 3D going on in your characters, which I really, really like. I think that's something special.
Thank you. No, that means a whole lot to me. And it was something that was really important. I don't know. All the things that I've loved, all the TV shows and movies and comics that I've loved are all filled with characters that I feel like I would know. If you met them, there's enough substance to these written characters that you could really get to know them. And I love what you were saying about children and adolescents. And I think the thing I love about adolescents is they are potential defined. And because of that, they're so frustrated. I watch so many kids who can think so far beyond their years. And, you know, like I said, I teach art. And then when they try to put pencil to paper, you know, it's my job to give them, to question them so that they can come up with ideas, but also to give them the techniques to actually portray what they want to. And watching that frustration and that desire to be adult and beyond your years and that frustration, the fact that your body just isn't working the way you want it to is fascinating.
Well, that's where that element comes out, I think, really strongly in the creators. And I think it's something that someone like me who just, you know, I don't remember my adolescent years anymore. I'm too far past it. But for me to be able to read it and to get that inkling of understanding back, I think is really something very special, and especially told in such a fantasy, borderline horror kind of way. I think it's something that I can relate to, so I like that.
Well, thank you. And I have a lot of fun like trying to make everything have some sort of basis in reality and research. There's even like a pseudoscience that I really, really researched and planned out with how the power works. In my job, I've worked with a lot of students who have autism, and I've learned so much about kids who are on the spectrum over the years, and. You know, one of the big misconceptions about these kids is that they don't feel emotion. Because I get where the misconception comes. A lot of times, a kid who's on the spectrum has Asperger's or autism. They can act very literal. and almost like they're being obsessive over logistics. But I did a lot of research into kind of the neuroscience that goes of what we know so far. And one of the things is that a person who is on the spectrum who has Asperger's or autism, they have an underdevelopment of white matter or fiber tracts that interconnect the different aspects of or parts of the brain. And so one of the things that's that feeds into that misconception isn't that they don't feel emotion. It's that since they're not as connected, they can't feel one while doing the other. So it's like I can either approach this analytically or emotionally, but not both at the same time. So when they feel emotion, it's 10 times what we would, like somebody like you or I would feel, because we can analyze and be logical at the same time. But when they're logical and look using that those analytical parts, they can hyper focus and do like incredible things that, you know, we're so kind of dirtied with emotion, for lack of a better way to say that. And so the creators posits that, well, what if we took the fiber tracts and the white matter and said, well, what if it was a hyperactivity of these things and that's what gave these kids these powers? And then since the allegory already lines up with kids with different needs, it just made a lot of sense for me to really base everything. And there's actually like explanations of that in the, or kind of allusions to that in the book. But I also run the comic as on the web. And if you get into, I think, chapter 5, I have like really long, probably too long, like journal entries about the neuroscience of autism and how it connects with what I was trying to do with the creators and how I'm trying to kind of stick up for them with this storyline and stuff like that.
Well, it's really great stuff. I mean, I'm dying to see the second book. I think it's going to be really something to get it to dive into and to.
Thank you.
I get lost in them. I start reading it, and before I know it, I'm at the end going, it's the end already?
Oh.
So that just always gets me on that. So if people want to get the creators, what's the best way to go about getting that? If they, let's say they can't get to a convention. What do they do?
So if you are existing in May of 2018, I would go to Kickstarter.com and search for The Creators and back it on Kickstarter. You can get the first book. You can back the second book. You can do both. Actually get a little bit of a deal when you get both at the same time. Or you can find everything that I do in my online store, spaghettikiss.etsy.com, or just go to spaghettikiss.com and it'll direct you there.
Cool. And this ends at the end of the month, so we've got a little time, but you don't want to wait too long.
No. I'm so close to the goal right now.
Oh, too, really? So. When we're talking? Yeah. Okay, because, you know, hopefully things will be past that, and then you get into stretch goals and good things like that before too long. So
that's what I'm hoping for.
I got to ask one more question, Michael, because it just comes up to me. Have any of your students ever sat down and read The Creators?
I don't think any of my current students have. Okay, I always get nervous because it does have some rough parts, like nothing inappropriate, but it definitely has some heavy moments in it. I've been teaching for 16 years, so my oldest students are actually about to turn 30, which is really weird. But I've had some of my old students read it and kind of get back to me. And it's always cool to see them reach out to me and like make connections with what I've done in the classroom to what I do as an author.
So I was wondering if any of them came back and said, you based that on me, right? Such a character was me, because I've had some of my friends, when they read something and they know the person who's writing, they always go and say, that was me, right? You were focusing that on me, right?
And I haven't had that yet with a student.
Okay.
I do it with my friends all the time. I actually just killed one of my best friends in the comic.
Oh, no.
And was posting it all over online, and she was so excited to die, and she was crushed to death by a giant kaiju monster, and she was just ecstatic.
It's funny, because I have a friend who writes another book, and he had a friend that was so thrilled to be in his comic. And the moment he gave him the issue, the first issue he's in, well, he dies by the end of it. And he's like, well, wait a minute, I'm dead already. I just started.
Fantastic.
Well, Michael, you're doing wonderful stuff. I can't wait to see more. I know your Kickstarter is going to be a huge success, and I know you're going to get to continue these good things. I don't know how many volumes you have in mind for the creators, but I want to be around for the ride because I think it's going to be a great ride, and I think people will really enjoy it. So I highly recommend get the Kickstarter, look up the creators, and support Michael as he does this wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast, Kevin Roy Detelli.
Hi, everyone.
And there he is. And question we've got for you, you've got a Kickstarter that's underway right now. Why don't you tell people about it?
Yeah, so Glacial is a pastiche made in a world made 100% of snow, ice, and weirdos. I'm from Quebec. It's the French-Canadian place in Canada, and we got like a winter that is like 8 months long. So I hate winter, and this is my revenge versus winter. And it's really inspired by my love for video games, for like Fallout and Borderlands. So it's take place in that world that is made of snow and fucking Jackass, you know.
Okay, so now this is starting on the 2nd. When's it ending?
It will be on the 1st of January, June.
Oh, but I mean, when is the Kickstarter ending?
Yeah, the 1st of June.
Oh, 1st of June, sorry. Okay, I thought you said January. I was like, whoa, maybe that's when
the
book's
that's a long campaign.
Yeah, sure. It's a little long of a Kickstarter. You normally don't let you do that long. So, okay, so what we've got is got this going until the 1st of June. So you've got good time to go out and support this good thing. I like the art that I see of it really a lot. It's who's doing the artwork on this?
His name is Rob Kane, and it's a friend of mine. We have been collaborating comic books since we really started together. He is my partner in crime. He is from Sacramento in California. We started back 2 years ago a publishing company named Rising Cross Publishing, and we both stopped publishing to go 100% on creation. And like a couple of months after stepping publishing together, I did go to Rob and I say, I have an idea for a project. Do you want to do it with me? And he said, yeah, let's do it. So we did continue together. So he is a new curator. I'm a new curator too, but we have a small background in publishing together. So it's like we are a couple, a comic book couple, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as it says on your website, kevinroydetelli.com, it says, a new ice age begins. Some survive, some evolve. But everyone are bastard. I don't understand what that term means. What does that mean? Everyone are bastard.
Actually, right? Yeah. Actually, it is that it's an everyone is like in survival mode.
So, oh, okay, gotcha. Okay,
and so everyone is kind of a jackass in that world. So
oh, okay. So it's survival and
food.
People who have to survive do different things than people who may feel more secure.
Yeah. Totally.
Now, it says in here that it's a sandbox post-apocalyptic world made 100% of ice and snow, created with hate for the Quebec winter. Perfect for fans of Fallout, Borderlands, just dark humor with some gore involved. So, okay, so talk to me. You said that the winter inspired it, but how about the characters and stuff like that? Are they based on people you know? Are they people that are new from your imagination? How'd you come up with them?
The main character, I will say, it's my first book, and it's kind of really personal. So I will say the main character is myself, and I always dream, because I'm burning that place and I hate winter, I always dream of kind of the American dream, I could say, that I want to go to L.A. and make films and stuff like that since I'm really young. So I have an obsession with the big city and stuff like that, and I'm stuck in that winter. So I'm kind of the main character. The young version of me is the main character, I will say. And other character could be some of her, my parents, some of her friends at school, or I was and stuff like that, teachers, and, but put in that post-apo world. So it's a gift to the young version of myself, I would say, that I'm making with this book. So it's
You're Kralix then?
Yeah, I would say that. Kralix. I'm Kralix.
Okay. Now there's another character. I'm trying to get his I don't know how to pronounce it. Hyggjar Hyggjarsula. How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, Hyggjarsula. It's pretty complicated. It's an idea from the artist Rob that was listening to a song. I don't remember the language of that song, but it's a really really obscure language, and that's actually the name of the song. But I don't know what it's mean. I was like, okay, that's cool. It's some post-apo and weird. So let's do it.
Okay. Okay. Now, according to the website, now, of course, this came out in March, and that was, well, you were first announcing you were going to do a Kickstarter. It says that Kralix's story arc is planned as a mini-series of 6 issues. We're building Glaxiel as something that can be extended. We believe this world needs more than just one mini-series. So talk a little bit about that, about the Kralix character and stuff like that, because something interesting happens to him. He's... I don't know if I want to spoil it, but there's a let's just say that he has like followers, and basically they're not around to follow him anymore, as I understand. Am I right on that?
Yeah, actually, I can tell the story a little bit. Okay. So the book directly starts with a mass suicide. Actually, he is part of a community that all commit suicide together, but he is the only one that won't kill himself because he is upset with the big city, the last big huge city that is kind of a ripoff of Manhattan. And he really want to go there because since he was young, he saw some ads in the wood of toys and everyone, some ads of people that are like happy and stuff like that. So you really want to go to this huge city and finally have the lifestyle that you wish that you want. So this is his motivation to kill himself. But since he is really young, he is part of that cult that love too much guns. And so at that point, the story really start at the moment that they all kill themselves with their guns, but not that kid. And that kid decide to go alone in the wood to find that big city. And of course, on his road, he will find some people that he... You wish that he will never meet.
Are you going to explain why they kill themselves? I don't, you know, I'm not sure why that's going to take place.
Actually, so the cult, what they believe, actually, it's when everyone will find a gun, because the gun are really rare. It's like taking place after like a big EP movement when the snow did fall down. So the gun was like out of the country in the United States, like gun being destructed and stuff like that. So gun are really, really rare. Mm-hmm. So their mission, their quest as a cult was to find guns, one for each member, and it is the day that they have found a gun for each member. Oh. So they finally kill themselves, and they think that they will go to some kind of heaven together, something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's different. Is he going to spread that philosophy, or is he kind of... you know, obviously, he doesn't necessarily believe in it because he's still alive, so... That's kind of an interesting twist in that. So why is he part of a group if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't follow the procedures of it?
Oh, his parents, simple like that. Actually, gotcha. Yeah, he is born in the community. He's like the youngest one. All the others are older. He is like this. The kid is 13 years old, but the other ones are 40 and more.
Gotcha.
So he is like the little kid, and he's stuck in that place because everyone is protecting the kid. So
okay. So, okay, so he all this stuff happens, and he decides to go to the big city.
Yeah, his quest is to reach the big city, but would he? That's the big question.
Yeah, so he can't go alone, I would imagine. That's where this other character we mentioned, name I can't pronounce, comes in. Does he run into that character as he goes along?
It will come really, really later. He is not part of that issue. First issue, like on Kickstarter, will be a first confrontation. His name is Doug Newman. That will be the first guy that we'll really meet in the wood.
Okay.
And he is a really badass guy. He kind of look. He has a look kind of the Fallout armor that we see a lot. The T-40, I think they call it. So he is really in a big armor, kind of war armor type of armor. And he meet that guy in the wood. That's the first guy they will meet. And some God Keeper that is another kind of cult that will meet him as well. So he will have already a lot of problems in that first issue.
Okay, now, well, there's a sentence that you read on the website that says, Kralix decided to take all the guns and go in the URSSA, which I imagine is the country where the city is, to find hope, love, and a better life, and it's not really what he will find. Which, of course, is, any good video game thing. It always takes up places where people don't necessarily find their life's dreams. They have to struggle their way through. So that's pretty good stuff. So you guys, did you come up with the concept? And then you said you talked to Rob and Rob got involved. How much did you develop it pretty much? And then he came in and put the visuals together?
Actually, what I did, write the script for the number one, and actually how the kind of Bible, I would say, of the world, because it's a world that I have in mind, like, I guess, for 5 or more years in my mind. So I did write everything down, and he did start building the world visually with my words, actually. But he is for a lot of things. Like, it's really a teamwork. Rob did bring some fantastic design to it, and even had some stuff that I did not even think about it. So it's really, really, really building that world together. It's a really fun process to work with Rob. Actually, I enjoyed it a lot. It's
okay, because it says on here, it says Glaxil is not around one character, but around a world full of crazy folks, dead folks, and a little bit of hope. Which is kind of interesting. You got to have that little spark of hope in there somewhere, or else it's kind of really, depressing.
Yeah, there is some good folks. There is not just bad guys. Actually, we'll see, as long as the story goes, then there will be some... Kralix will make some friends and stuff like that, and he will probably reach the city he wants, but would he find what he think will find out there? That's another question. But yeah, it's about a world. This is not just a series. What I really want to build with that is a franchise, actually. I want to make more series, some one-shots, and after maybe goes in another medium. We could be talking about short film and stuff like that to start, but we're really, really building a world with that. I have already other artists that are going to work on that, so this Kickstarter is really the way to start financing, actually, the world building thing that we are making. So that first issue, if we got the Kickstarter funded, it's the beginning of more than just a mini series. It's going to be the beginning of a world, actually.
Okay, so how much are you asking for on the Kickstarter?
We go with a modest $3,000 for the issue, actually.
Okay, $3,000 for that. That's good. And the pages that I see, they really look good. I have to say that... Rob does a beautiful job of. Does he do the coloring as well? Or do you have a colorist?
He do everything. He do the colors, the lettering, the inking, the pencil. He do really, really everything on the book.
It's really pretty. There's one page is almost entirely red. That's kind of interesting. Must be terrible things are going on in that. And then when there's snow,
exactly. It's actually when everything die. Everyone
die. Oh, that's the okay. Got that's when the group goes. Okay, so then we got blue in the snow, blue and white for the snow page, and so he does a beautiful job on the coloring. And particularly, I like the figures are good. I like his ability to do expressions and movement and stuff like that, which is really good. It really just leaps off the page, which I really like.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I'm a fan, first of all. Actually, our story started when I started publishing. I was searching my first book to publish, actually. And I was looking in Facebook group to some stuff that I could publish. Mm-hmm. And I did fall on his book, Saint Six. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, damn, that guy is really, really good. And that's all it started. I was like, do you want me to publish your book? He said yes. And after like a month after I said yes, he said yes. We started publishing together. So he become a partner on the company. So it's really a kind of love story, I will say, with him. I'm a fan, first of all.
Which is great. Now, what's the name of the company again?
It was Rising Cross Publishing. Okay. We are not anymore the lead of the company, but we're not anymore part of it, actually.
Oh, you're not?
Now we focus on creating.
Oh, gotcha. So, okay, yeah, because not many people want to run companies if they're into comics. They want to make comics because that's what the point is.
That's the fun. That's the fun part, for sure.
So, okay. So how long have you been putting the book together?
Me and Rob, we have been working together for more than a year, I think. A year.
No, I see. In March, you had about half the pages done. What are you at now?
I guess there is like three or four pages left to do, okay, but so after there is like the lettering and the design of the book, so some stuff can change, but we are nearly done. It's sure by the end of May we are done, actually.
Cool. Okay, so by the time the Kickstarter is over, you'll have all the pages completed.
Yeah, that was the idea.
Very cool. Okay, so that's good. And, of course, when this airs, you'll be in the middle of it. I don't know exactly how much it's going to be at this point, but hopefully it's a good number of supporters already in there. But, again, June the 1st, you want to make sure that if you are interested in this kind of topic, which, of course, I am, you want to get in there and support, because you want to make sure this book gets a good start. And if you make enough money, you never know. You might have to not have to do a Kickstarter for the second one quite long. Now,
that would be awesome.
Now, the thing I'm interested in, though, you do talk about an annual number one, which will conclude number 1.1 in short stories by guest writers and artists. So I'm kind of curious about that. If you have an annual, that's going to be the – what's 1.1? Is that another issue besides one?
Actually, it will be a story that will be taking place at the same time that number one, but with another character that will actually join Kralix on the road in number two. So it's like two even taking it at the same time, actually. So, and the other thing, the anthology, it's where we start building the world with other location, other people. So it's really that anthology will be to showcase the world, actually. So it's our plan.
Okay, so that's cool. So you want people to contact you at your email. I notice kevinraitatelli@gmail.com if they're interested. What if somebody, if an artist wants a story, maybe you'd provide them with a story if they need one?
Oh, actually, even writer can send me an email if they want to be part of it. I think that's – I really love collaborating with people. So for me, it's fun. It's a game. So
okay.
Collaborating with people, even writers, come aboard, and we're going to have fun, actually. So okay. Everyone.
Now, it says number two is already in work, planned to be released later this year. So how far – are you doing the writing for two? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, number two is written. So once we have finished number one, the heart of number one, we directly jump on the art of number two. So we want to go faster as we can. So, and okay. Of course, keeping the standard quality we have.
Okay. Now, how's this going to be distributed? If people want to get a hold of it, let's say for some reason they missed out on the Kickstarter. What's the best way to get a hold of the books? I mean, are you guys going to go through Diamond? Are you going to be at conventions? How are you going to do it?
So our plan, we made a Kickstarter. It's like if you're on a Kickstarter, you got like exclusive stuff and you're going to be the first one to have the book. We really don't know at that point when we're going to release it, because our plan is actually with that Kickstarter, we're going to make a print for a final version of the book and send it to publishers, actually. So we're going to use the fund of the Kickstarter to pitch. Okay. And if there is a publisher, of course, then the plan would be different if I self-publish it. So it's going to be a self-publisher. If there is publisher, we will go with publisher.
Okay. Any idea who – well, probably don't want to reveal who you're going to apply to. You probably better hold that close to the vest. But I'm curious about the name. Where does the name come from, Glaxo?
Actually, in French, we say that oftenly when it's really cold, we say glacial, and it's just like it's the world that we put in English as well. So, but we put an X because an X is always cooler than a C.
Right. So, okay. So we would say in English, glacial.
Yeah.
Is what we would say. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So it's going to be interesting to see a world that's completely covered by snow. I mean, is the city also covered by snow? Is there snow there as well?
Yeah, actually, it's like, imagine for 30 years, there is like snow that never stopped falling down everywhere on Earth. So I don't know if you remember the movie, I think it was Roland Emmerich that did that. It was like The Day After Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that movie, but the action takes place 30 years after that. So even the buildings are under and stuff like that. So it's a new world, it's a new Earth, and everyone is like rebuilding the world over that snow. So some has bring some scrap from the bottom and to the top of the snow and building house with that. So it's really, really minimalistic survival world.
Mm-hmm. So something happened that caused this Will we find out what that is eventually, or basically, that's not important to the story, you figure? How's that go?
At that point, it's not important, but we are planning some prelude, actually, that will take place in that world before it was completely made of snow. So for that moment, it's really not important for the development, because we really play on the fact that everyone is making his own version of why it's like that. So it's kind of, there is a lot of religion and cult in that world. So everyone has his own version, like God was really hungry, right, or stuff like that. So everyone has his own version of why.
Okay, because it's really interesting to me that, because I agree with you, I moved south to get away from snow, and this past winter I didn't have to deal with it at all. I went to some cold places to go to conventions and stuff like that, but I avoided the snow as much as I could. It's nice to, when you live in Florida, it's rare when you see snow. Super rare. So I was, you know, I can sympathize with somebody who wants to move out of the snow regions. I did. So what about you in real life? Are you planning to move to are you going to stay in that area, or are you going to plan to move to a more temperate climate?
I would love to move. For now, that's not my plan. My girlfriend is studying here, so we wait until she finishes Clarity, but probably California, Sacramento. I have a couple of friends out there, and Rob is there, the artist of the book. So I already have kind of a family out there, so probably I will go out there. I really love the place. I did visit it last year for a month, and it is at that point I was like, I need to do Glacial, like winter hate you. So let's do that. Because I did left Quebec in January to go in California, and that was like the coolest gift I did to myself.
Oh, so that was like a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So, well, how's he doing drawing? Because if he lives in Sacramento, he doesn't see snow very often either. How's he doing, like, drawing and putting in snow?
Actually, I did bring him one time here. So he did come for a week. So he really understands what it is. And I think that it did him even harder, because he never saw snow before, and so he did come in the middle of the season. He was like, "Oh, that's fucking cold." He did not even bring a water coat. He didn't even know that was a thing. So, I think that's for why that the cold looks so cold in Glacial, actually.
Okay.
So
cool, because he's that visit kind of told him what the feelings are going to be like, and when you get that sense, you can convert it to the page the way that he's doing. He does a nice job. The pages look great with it. I really like the way that he does it, and the expressions on the people, sometimes they're a little, I don't know exactly how to put it, but they're a little unhappy, or because people who live in climates like that tend to be more determined. You know, they always talk about people live in the South. They're always happy. They're outside all the time. They get to go to parties all the time. Well, people up North tend to be much more stern. They had the Civil War down here in the U.S., and they always said, don't get the people up North angry, because once they get started, they will not stop until you're finished. That's what they said. And that's kind of what's conveyed. And there's a one page particular where I see the people's faces. There's a little bit of snow on somebody's shoulder, it looks like. And I just, you know, is that going to be part of his character? I mean, is he going to be pretty determined, Kralix, as far as getting things done and making things? If he makes a decision, does he pretty much stick with it until it's done?
Yeah, you really want to reach that place, so it will never stop. You know, everyone is dead behind him, so he have no reason now to stop. So he is someone really determined, and no one can stop him. Even if he is not strong, he is like a little kid, and everyone are warriors in that kind of Ursa. The place you did talk about before, Ursa, is actually a place between, it's like a danger zone between the big city and the small community killed and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So everyone is a warrior out there, and him, he is just a kid, but he is really determined. So yeah, he is a nerd guy.
Well, I got to ask, are they going to run into other communities as he tries to get to the city? Because, you know, obviously, this one's not going to be there anymore, but as far as, like, are there other ones that are kind of different kinds of communities as opposed to this one?
Yeah, he will actually meet one directly in issue one. And these are really, really weird.
Okay. Because I always wonder, when people live secluded from other people, sometimes they develop their own way of thinking. And it's not necessarily the most, shall we say, productive way to do it. And so I kind of wonder what other communities might be out there. Because, you know, I have to say, when somebody commits suicide with guns, I mean, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of it in my mind. I mean, that's really kind of interesting. But I'm going to be fascinated to see what this other group has to do with it. And I, of course, don't spoil it if it's going to be important to the story. But I'm just going to be curious to see what kind of other things develop when people are secluded from big groups.
That one, I can speak of that one since it isn't the number one, so it's not a spoiler. But that one, actually, they're fascinated of they're building a body for God, actually. They think that he is mad and he is for that there is no everywhere. So what they do, they're building a really giant kind of kaiju with their frozen body parts. So if, for example, someone froze his arm, he just cut it and glue it to the big monster. So they're making a monster with their arms and legs and stuff like that, because they all froze their body part. They're really weird guys. Mm-hmm. Kind of the white dude in Mad Max Fury Road. Mm-hmm. Kind of that type of character that are really, really determined to respect the rules and stuff like that.
Are they going to – if they attach the parts to it, is it alive?
No, it is not. They're just building that thing, but they think that the spirit of God, Jesus, is going to go inside.
Oh, gotcha.
You really want to bring back Jesus, so they're making a big body for him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's a weird building.
Yeah, this is what happens when you get way far away from any kind of contact sometimes. You got to be careful what you come up with. Sure. So that's good. He's going to introduce them. I mean, when he's traveling, how many people is he going to have with him? I mean, obviously, you know, you've talked, this one character is going to show up later in the story. You said he meets somebody pretty quickly. I mean, are there going to be other people that share his vision that want to go with him when they run into him?
It's a survival mode, so there will be some people that are going to be friends, and after enemies and friends again, some die and some come back. So there is a couple of variation of people that are going to go with him and without him, fighting him. So I can say the numbers, actually, because there is even characters that I have not even imagined that I know that will come to the story the way that it is built in.
Very cool. Very cool, because you don't want to give away too much. I mean, I don't want you to say that, because some groups have a definite number. You know, some creators have definite numbers in mind. That's why I asked that question. But, you know, it's better for the story that we don't know. It's good, because, you know, if you don't know the number, then you might be surprised if somebody ends up getting killed that we didn't expect. That would be a good thing.
Yeah. And I don't want to know, because I think if I know, it's mean that the story don't grow on me. So I really want the story to still grow on me after and after. So I tried to write the issue, one issue per issue, two issue per issue. So it's let it grow on me, and I can still think about it and see fan reception. If fan love a character, maybe that my energy will be more on that character and stuff like that. So I really will really continue to react to the story and how the story is appreciated to bring more character or maybe less. So I'm building it as long as I need to build it.
Okay, so he's obviously going to travel to the city. Is that going to happen pretty quickly, or is it going to take some time? Like, say, maybe the first miniseries, they get to the city, and maybe the second series, they're in the city and we see stuff. How's that going to work?
It will. Okay. But I don't want to reveal too much.
Okay. This is my guess. I mean, my guess is that the first miniseries will be them getting there, and then afterwards we'll get the second. That's only my guess. Kevin may not have go. It may go a totally different route. But if I was doing a miniseries, that's how I would do it. So whatever works.
Go ahead.
That's why you're the storyteller. You have your own way of doing it, which will be good. So the first six issues are going to get started. There's going to be that annual coming. And the Kickstarter is going on right now. If you go to Kickstarter.com and look for GLAXIAL, V Yep. Look for that. That's the way to find it. I'm afraid some people might not put the X in there, and so I want to make sure people know how to get it. Get to that and support that, and make sure that there's lots of good money for these guys to keep going, because it's a fascinating concept, just interesting characters. I was stunned to hear you say this was your first one, because it feels like it's really developed, at least John put together.
I have a little background in publishing, so I guess that's like that was my practice, I could say. Mm-hmm. But I have fun, hopefully.
Very good. Well, I'm shocked, because it seemed pretty strongly put together. And but that's one of the great things about today. Kickstarter makes it possible for folks like you to be able to get your books out there and get it started and people to support you. So I think that's great.
Without the internet, I will have $20 on that. I did build for years, like the kind of fan base I have. So it's thank you to the internet and the inventor of the internet, actually.
See, I work on an indie comic with somebody, and the writer lives in Florida. The artist lives on the top of a mountain in North Carolina, has no car, and the only way he really communicates is through the internet. And then the color artist, she lives in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So all three of them have never been in the same room at the same time, at least not yet. They're talking about maybe next year doing something like that. But see, you're good that you know these guys. I mean, but now I got to ask, of course, how did you know Rob? I mean, did he live in your area before and then moved to Sacramento? How did you guys get to know each other?
No, it was in a comic book Facebook group, actually.
Oh, so it was? We okay.
There, and I saw his work, and I was like, oh, that guy is so good. So let's chat. And we did chat, and that's the beginning of our friendship, actually.
Cool.
But no, from where I came from, it's a really small French city. So so no one is really, really into comics and stuff like that. So I could not pair up with someone here. So I really needed to go on the internet and yell, hey, I want someone to make a book with me. So it's what I did. And I did find Rob, and I'm pretty happy.
Well, I have to say, there are French comics that I really enjoy. I mean, I've read a lot of French comics and stuff like that. Canada has their own comics. You guys have – there's Captain Canada, and there's all kinds of other stuff up there. It's probably limited more to bigger cities is where a lot of these things come from.
Yeah, actually, like, there is no big French-Canadian comics. I would say that there is some, but most of the French comics in French Canada is actually the European one, the one that came from France. And you come here, so it's most of the book that we have in French here are European stuff. So, and the Canadian English creator mostly all create American books. So since it is the language in the same North American continent, so we don't really have, I think, really big comic book identity. So, but I'm fine with that.
You should make it in French. Have the translate the dialogue into French.
Yeah, that's one of our plan. I just wanted to start in English since it is like a bigger fan base and stuff like that. So.
Right. Well, you know what? People like to go to America because here's where there are more people and there's a little more money available, and they can kind of help make these things happen. So it's a good place.
Yeah, that was the idea.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, it looks like a great book. It's Kickstarter. Go to GLAXIAL. And at there, and be sure to support it. And we want to see what these guys have in mind, because there's lots of good stuff. Just based on what I've seen so far, it really looks like a strong, strong series. And you never know, maybe some movie maker might look at it and say, this could make a good movie someplace.
Woohoo! Thank you so much, Wayne, for having me.
Oh, it's good to talk with you, and much success.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.